Welcome to Subjective Studio. Up first, we're going to be talking about the Apple event that just dropped. They led with the Apple Watch Series 6. So comes with the usual efficiencies and performance bumps that you'd expect to see. We got new colors, new frames, new bands. They switched the bands up. They're actually removing the lock from the bands, which I thought was interesting. It's just going to be a complete circle, almost elastic-y, and you have to slide it on and off. Kind of sounds like it's going to wear over time, but I guess we'll have to wait and see once we get it in our hands. I haven't actually checked it out yet. So other than that, they've added the blood oxygen sensor and an altitude meter and slightly brighter display, so you can see how high you are all the time. Other than that, not too much exciting for me. I would prefer them to move in a direction where more battery life. So there's a brand out there, and I forget the name of the brand off the top of my head, but that is doing the e-ink displays for smartwatches, which I think is super cool. I would love to see an Apple Watch move in that direction. But basically, you just get way better battery life. You're talking like 2 weeks without charging, and it still does a lot of the things you want a smartwatch to do. I'm sure eventually the Apple Watch is going to become more efficient, and we'll move in that direction as well. But rather than pumping all these new features out, I would rather see definitely an improvement to battery life, because that's really what's holding me back from picking one up at this point. More interesting to me was the Apple Watch SE. So they were marketing this as a replacement for your iPhone, essentially, if you want to, for kids. They're basically targeting parents with this one, because it's only $279 compared to, you know, a brand new iPhone's price. They set it up with all kinds of parental controls and time monitoring and things like that. Now, it will require a cellular plan, obviously, so that's kind of some added cost, but they're kind of pushing it as buy this for your kid instead of the iPhone, because it limits them to what they can do, because they can still make phone calls from the watch, and you can still get a hold of them when you need them, but it keeps them off social media and things like that that you might not want your kids exposed to. Which is cool. I think it's cool to see something like that. I know there was an interview with Tim Cook and Marques Brownlee. They were talking about pushing for a setup for an Apple Watch and an iPad rather than ever even having a phone. Like, some people don't really need a phone in public, which I can kind of agree with that. So I'm kind of moving in that direction. I used to have, I still have the I think it's iPhone 11 Pro Max, which is the big one. And I actually just picked up an iPad Pro not too long ago, and I don't really see myself needing my phone that much. Like, I'm always on the iPad when I'm in the house, so definitely with this next lineup of iPhones, I'm going to be picking up the smaller model. They also announced the iPad A12 chip, so they're moving their standard iPad to have the A12 chip, which I think is the one that's actually in the Pro right now. Which is, it's also bringing pencil support, which is cool. Other than that, nothing too exciting about the iPad, because it's still keeping the same form factor that it always had before. The more exciting release was the iPad Air. So this one has the new A14 chip. I think it's the only thing that has their new A14 chip. They're claiming 40% faster, even better Apple Pencil support, I suppose. It's going to have USB Type-C charging, which is nice. And Touch ID, I almost forgot to mention that. Touch ID in the lock button. So rather than, like, the Pro has the facial recognition set up, the Air won't have that. So that's, like, that's one of the only defining features at this point. The Pro has the 120Hz display and the facial recognition, excuse me. And the Air is just going to have Touch ID. At this point, they've pretty much completely destroyed the reason to buy an iPad Pro. Like, if you're buying an iPad Pro right now, you're probably buying the wrong one, unless you really need that 120Hz display, which I have one. It's definitely nice, but I don't know if it's worth the $200 in price compared to the iPad Air. In addition to that, they announced the Apple Fitness service. It's going to be, looks like, Live Studio. Kind of stuff, sort of like Peloton. I noticed somebody called out, I think Marquez tweeted about it as well. The iPad, or yeah, sorry, the Peloton stock completely tanked when this service was announced. So clearly a competing service there, but I'm not super excited about this one. I don't think I could see myself using a service like this. So what is more interesting to me though is the Apple One service. So this is combining all of Apple's services into one, essentially. So there's an individual plan for $14.95 that offers Apple Music, Apple TV, Arcade, and their Drive services. A family plan, which I'm assuming allows you to have more Apple accounts on one plan. And then a premier plan, which also includes news and their fitness service that we just talked about. I did the math. It's actually a pretty good deal. If you're locked into iOS and their ecosystem, it's a good deal. For me, I like to hop devices from time to time, so I don't think I could potentially switch to this. I prefer Google services just because I can use them on an iPhone, I can use them on an Android, I can use them on everywhere, you know what I mean? But up next is the operating system updates. So the iOS 14. This one's actually the most exciting for me from this whole event, I think. I've been using the beta for a while now, and the key feature that really makes this a big update is the app drawer, the app library. So now you no longer need to have all of your apps on all of your home screens. You can, because I mean, I have like maybe eight apps that I use in my day-to-day, or maybe not even day-to-day, maybe week-to-week, but I don't need to have all 150 apps that I have downloaded on my home screen, but I also don't want to delete them because when I need to use them, I need to use them and I don't have to re-download them every time. So I mean, this is very similar to the Android setup here, and it's kind of good to see them taking a little bit of feedback, I think, because I feel like this is a feature that Apple users have been looking for a very long time. That pretty much wraps up the entire Apple event. Nothing too exciting for me. I mean, I'm obviously waiting for the phones. I'm probably going to pick up the smaller Pro version of whatever the next phone is. That's kind of my target. But I would like to hear more about the Apple Silicon, which we'll talk about that in a little bit. Other than that, yeah, I mean, it's cool. Definitely a lot of good stuff going on, but nothing that's gonna really make me want to run to the Apple Store today. Up next, we've got Microsoft's new Xbox lineup, the Xbox Series S and Series X. They're priced pretty aggressively at $299 and $499. One's targeting 1440p at 120 FPS, and the other one, I think they're trying to claim that they can game at 8K. I'm not sure. It's definitely targeting 4K TVs. Where I think they really missed the mark, though, is with their lower-end model. Targeting 1440p doesn't really make any sense because TVs right now aren't sold at that resolution, and most people gaming on consoles aren't going to be buying monitors to use with them. So it just I think they could have brought the price point even farther down to like say $200 or $150 even if they had targeted 1080p at 60 hertz, and then really just pump out those Xboxes and get more people onto their service because that's what they're really trying to sell anyways is their new Xbox Game Pass service. But I just don't see it being worthwhile for either of these consoles because there's no exclusive games. If you want to game at 1440p, you're probably going to want to build a PC for a few hundred dollars more. I guess if you have a 4K TV, building a 4K gaming desktop or something like that is definitely going to cost a lot more than $500. So I guess that would be the biggest push. So say if you have a 4K TV. And you're not a PC gamer and you're not interested in ever building a PC, then that's probably the way to go. But it's just a tough sell without exclusive titles. In addition to that, we've got a 4K Nintendo Switch rumors. Another one that I really think they're missing the mark here. Why are they pushing for 4K? I'd rather see 1080p portable. Faster load times, smaller bezels on the screen. Like, just give me the exact same frame, the exact same setup that you have now, except expand the display to the edges of the screen and make it 1080p. And then maybe, I guess, like, I would rather see, I guess, and then docked, you could upscale it to 4K if you really wanted to, but I don't see a need for a 4K Switch, in my opinion. Most of the games that are running on the Switch right now aren't. aren't pushing a whole lot of image fidelity anyways, so it just doesn't really make sense. Doesn't really make sense to me. Up next, we've got the NVIDIA 30 series cards. NVIDIA announced the RTX 3070, 3080, and 3090, priced at $499, $699, and $1499, respectively. Huge gains over the 20 series cards. When the 20 series cards dropped, they were a bit of a letdown, and they introduced RTX, obviously, but most games didn't get playable frame rates anyways, so it wasn't a huge deal. A lot of games didn't even offer RTX support. So this is definitely a step in the right direction. I would love to pick up a 3080, but if you guys haven't heard, bots were set up in the initial purchasing, and nobody could get a hold of one. Basically, the bots just bought everything that was available, and now these scalpers are reselling it on eBay for ridiculous amounts of money because they're not available anywhere. Kind of a bad situation. I think the same thing happened with the PlayStation 5 as well. I know my friend was trying to buy one for the longest time and was unable to get his order in. They simply just sold out. These bots are just sitting there waiting to pick up the console. So I'm sure we'll probably be seeing a bunch of PlayStation 5s being sold on eBay as well. I don't think they're coming out until November though, so it's not as big of a deal because I'm sure Sony will manage to fix their supply. And also, put some measures in place to prevent these kind of attacks from happening. But anyways, so back to Nvidia's announcement. In addition to their 30 series cards, they've also dropped the Nvidia Broadcast app, which is pretty awesome. So they had their RTX Voice app out for a while, which essentially lets you remove background noise, and just really clear up your audio. And I'm always skeptical whenever I see like the AI buzzword because a lot of times it's not gonna perform the way you would expect. But I use their RTX Voice app and it's awesome. And now I'm actually recording this right now on their broadcast app. So definitely works pretty well. I'm excited to see some new features come out for it. It's pretty plain Jane right now, but definitely excited for the future for sure. Well, at this point, if you guys are still watching or listening, take the time to go ahead and subscribe to the podcast. If you're listening to it on one of the platforms, go and check it out on YouTube. If you're on YouTube, go check out one of the podcasting platforms. My name is Zach Ohaircheck. This is my first podcast, so feedback is definitely welcome. Give me some feedback and tips of what you think I could do better. And if you want to be a guest or if you have any business questions, shoot me an email at Zach, Zack, at subjective.dev. That's Zack at subjective.dev. Foldable talk. We've got the Motorola Razr 2 and the Surface Duo. Hefty price tags on these. Both looking at around $1,400. My issue with these devices, great innovative devices. They look awesome. I would love to get my hands on them, but they're really underperforming. For $1,400, you expect flagship level processors and cameras, etc., and you're really still just paying for that research and development at this point. I actually prefer the Microsoft Duo's implementation, where it's two separate screens. It's a foldable device, but it's two separate screens. The screen itself doesn't fold. I think it's going to be more durable, and the overall hardware just looks and feels better, in my opinion. Most of the apps don't have a whole lot of support for two screens yet. I know Microsoft has really worked on their suite with Outlook and Word and all of those kind of things being able to use on both screens and really utilize the real estate. But a lot of apps just look clunky and awkward. It's more meant for multitasking at this point. Unfortunately, the Duo, the Microsoft Surface Duo, is the shape of it, the overall shape looks uncomfortable to me. It's not small enough to one hand in any form. Like you can fold it and it's still just too big to use. It really looks awkward as a phone. The Motorola Razr 2, I'm obviously I've had a obviously I've had a Razr phone myself, and the nostalgia's there, but I'm still just skeptical on the processor. I don't want to pay $1,400 for a phone that has a clunky UI and things like that. So I think maybe the third generation we can start to see flagship processors or a better camera in there, but until that happens, I really don't think it's worthwhile. Speaking about the Microsoft Surface Duo, I also wanted to take a look at the Microsoft Surface Pro X. So everybody's talking about Apple Silicon right now, right? They're coming out with their own ARM-based chips that they're planning on putting in their MacBooks, which I think is going to make a bit of a merge happen for macOS and iOS, because you're probably going to be able to write code, one code base, and deploy to both app stores, which is, for developers, it's awesome. But I saw a bunch of articles that were like, Microsoft shouldn't follow Apple into ARM. And I'm like, wait a second, Microsoft did it first. So Microsoft dropped their Surface Pro X laptop, and it's an ARM-based laptop, which is basically what Apple's doing now. They're ARM-based MacBooks. And the only thing that Microsoft really dropped the ball with is their software was lacking. Basically, Microsoft put the product out there and said, "Okay, developers, what do you got? Can you make use of this? Can you do something with it?" And Apple is kind of taking a different approach and investing some of their own software engineers' time into making sure that there are at least, their base Apple applications that work on the ARM chip. So you're still going to have your email, your messaging, and all the iOS stuff that you're used to is going to work in macOS. And they also set up platforms for developers to migrate their apps. Microsoft didn't really do that. They're just like, here, it's kind of a test project to take it out. And that's something that Apple's really done well, is their ability to move second is just incredible. Back in the day, Apple was an innovation company, right? They came out with the first iPhone. It changed the whole world, really. And now they've moved away from being innovative, and they're almost following now. They're second movers. They have that second mover advantage where they'll watch some other company try some technology and then take their time, have their engineers perfect it, and then once it's perfected, then they move in. You were seeing this with 5G, we're seeing this with the ARM chip. It's just something that they do really, really well. Either way, I think ARM-based laptops are really going to be the future, because 90% of people don't need the x86 architecture. And even things like Visual Studio Code for developers and stuff is dropping ARM compatible version. So you're going to be able to do all the same stuff. And the ARM chip, just the efficiency of it, you're going to get way better battery life. I'm talking like probably 2 days on a laptop, rather than the, 9 hours that we're seeing on thin and lights right now. The only space that I'm not sure of is the, enthusiast space and PC gaming, because as of right now, ARM's not really compatible with any other GPUs. So unless something shifts in that market, I think x86 architecture will still, be the dominating force behind, desktops and stuff, at least consumer grade desktops. Well, that wraps up the first episode of the Subjective Studio podcast. Thanks for listening, and thanks for watching.